welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Today, I'm talking with David Platt about his annual Daddy-Daughter Disneyland vacation, this time over Memorial Day, which happened to coincide with the opening of Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout and all of those extra Summer of Heroes activities. So, welcome back to the show, David. I guess you got a lot to talk about this time around.
I do. I hope this doesn't run too long tonight.
So I guess we should start with, kind of setting the stage a little bit. Obviously, this is an annual trip. You do this each year. And, you know, last year, if I remember correctly, you kind of delayed, right? You did the daddy-daughter trip in the fall because you wanted to do it when there were holiday decorations. You were back to spring. Was there a method behind that madness, or you just didn't want to wait any longer?
Oh, actually, our fall trip last year was a family trip, so that wasn't our daddy-daughter trip.
Okay.
We had done a daddy-daughter trip about March in 2016, so
okay.
It was just about a year, a little over a year from that.
Okay, so was there a particular reason that you did the daddy-daughter trip farther towards summer this time?
The main reason was just school off days. Her school district had a few more off days than other districts in the usually do. So she only missed a couple days of school for 5 days in the parks, which is always a plus.
Sure. Okay. And how long was this trip going to be?
Well, it had originally been slated for 4 days in the parks. You know, one travel day on each end. And then 4 full days in the park. But just due to the variances in flight cost and hotel cost, it actually ended up being cheaper to stay for a 5th day. So
you gotta love Disney math.
Got to, yeah. So I had to do that. The 5th day actually turned out to be pretty expensive all around, which we'll talk about later. But. So, yeah, I already mentioned the hotel. I got a pretty good rate that I was happy with at the Paradise Pier. So got to stay there for the first time. That was nice.
Well, so let's I guess that's a good place to start with the trip report then, because it was a new hotel for you. And it has gotten some, refreshing at least recently. So what was your take on Paradise Pier? Because I think you've now done the trifecta, right? You've stayed at all three of the on-property resorts now?
Yes. Yeah, I've done all three. This completed it for me. And I had been shying away from the Paradise Pier for a long time because, not to disparage it in any way, but it's the lesser of the three hotels, in price and location. And I just always, kind of veered towards the other places because of that.
And let me ask you about that just a little bit more, because I think that does come up. People think about the Paradise Pier being maybe the least convenient of the on-property hotels. It's often presented that way. It struck me when I was in Disneyland that once you're there, I mean, it's like across the sidewalk almost from Disneyland Hotel. Did you really notice that much difference location-wise?
Really, no. It is kind of, it's a little further down Disneyland way than the Disneyland Hotel is. It's directly across the street from the Grand Californian, and you used to actually be able to cut through the Grand Californian and get to the parks that way, so it wasn't a bad walk at all. But they just recently started only allowing Grand Californian guests into the front entrance of the hotel. You have to show your room key. It's a different color than all the other room keys, so they can quickly tell if you're a guest of the hotel. So Paradise Pier guests have to walk all the way down, essentially, to the Disneyland Hotel, and then all the way through Downtown Disney, which people were just irate about on the internet when it happened. So I was prepared for it to take forever. It was, you know, maybe a 10 to 15 minute walk to the park still. Okay. It was not bad at all.
So not too bad. And what you're talking about, actually, we probably want to take just a couple of minutes to address, and that is that it was right around that time that you were heading down at the end of May that they finally sort of finished the security updates at Disneyland. And what they've done is essentially move the security check-in points. And part of all of that, I think that's where the Grand Californian entrance issue, you know, came in, because they're, you know, kind of using the that entrance from Grand Californian to California Adventure, you know, that because of the new security procedures, I think that has a piece of it. And because you can get into the parks that way, they had to be a little more careful, too, about access to the hotels. So did you notice any, you know, big differences in terms of security processing, you know, from your trip just a few months earlier in what I guess it was November?
Well, it's hard for me to compare, because the trip back then, I was coming in from the other side. I was coming in from the Harbor Boulevard side. And there's always been a pretty big disparity in the lines of security in those two.
Okay.
Because there are just so many more hotels on Harbor. But I can compare to our past trips when we've stayed at the Disneyland Hotel, which we've stayed at a couple times.
Okay.
The lines have been fairly lengthy still in the mornings, because everybody from all three Disney-owned hotels is converging at that one spot, kind of right at the end of Downtown Disney, right before you get to the Esplanade.
Right.
Well, now they have, like you mentioned, they've dispersed those security points into a perimeter kind of around Downtown Disney. So the only people going through the security checkpoint where we were entering were Disneyland Hotel guests and Paradise Pier guests. And I would be hard-pressed to tell you at any point during our trip that I waited more than 2 minutes in a security line. It was pretty much every time just a straight walk up and walk through. Now, granted, a lot of those mornings were for 7 or 8 a.m. early entries, so the lines are always shorter than
right,
anyway.
Right, right. But it makes a certain amount of sense, right? Because you really, you know, the bottleneck is the security piece where they're doing the actual searching. I mean, that's the part that slows things down, and they've essentially divided that up into three separate checkpoints now, at least, or really four separate checkpoints, because you've got
I think it's four now.
Yeah, well, because you've got a separate one, you know, coming into downtown into Downtown Disney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got one there right at the entrance to Downtown Disney. You've got one at the Grand Californian entrance to Downtown Disney. And then you've got one over at the where the tram drops off. And I believe there's one more somewhere that I'm missing, but anyway.
Okay. So back to the hotel itself, compare it a little bit to your experiences at the other Disney-owned hotels there at Disneyland.
Well, I like all three hotels for different reasons. Grand Californian, obviously, location, location, location. It can't be beat. And it's, you know, the most luxurious of all the hotels. Disneyland Hotel, I love because of the theming. It's the most, in my opinion, the most Disney of all three hotels. The Paradise Pier, I didn't know what to expect. I walked in and my very first impression was that the rooms are huge. They're the largest of all three Disney hotels. You could easily fit a family of five in there and not feel crowded. There were two queen beds in there, and then a little couch that folded down, I think, into a twin bed that would easily fit up to probably a preteen.
Wow. So that's a really important point to mention, because I think a lot of people have this impression, and you know, especially those of us from the Walt Disney World side of things, that almost by definition, because it's less expensive, the rooms must be smaller, they must be more Spartan. And it doesn't seem to be the case at all.
No, I was super impressed. I mean, with not only the size, but the decor of the rooms. You know, it's nothing fancy, but it's got a nice beach theme that really ties in well to the Paradise Pier area of California Adventure, you know, the hotel's namesake.
Right.
And to make it even, you know, a better tie-in, we managed to score a premium view room. So, you know, we open our windows and we have this grand view of Paradise Pier and the rest of California Adventure. It was great.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's one of those, I almost hesitate to mention it, but I feel like we should. It's one of the hidden secrets, I feel like, of Paradise Pier Hotel, and that is that you can get some really amazing views at Paradise Pier, and essentially pay the same thing you would pay for a standard room just across the way at Disneyland Hotel, but get just amazing views.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've done premium view at all three hotels now. Of course, Disneyland Hotel, they do not advertise any theme park view, obviously, just because of the direction the windows face. There really isn't a possibility of one. But comparing the premium view at Paradise Pier to the premium view at the Grand Californian, I think I liked Paradise Pier better because it's a little further away and a lot higher up. You just get a much more panoramic view of California Adventure. Whereas at Grand Californian, you're right there. Yeah, you can see a little bit of the park, but there's no way you could see the whole thing.
Right, because you're almost so close to it that it's underneath you.
Yeah, for sure. So close you can hear Goofy Sky School going by every 30 seconds, which is, you know, maybe not the most pleasant sound. But, you know, one thing that was just awesome about this premium view room is on our final night, you know, my daughter and I were kind of brainstorming a way to kind of make that night special. And, you know, we were getting ready for bed and we just opened up the window. It was about 9 o'clock and we watched World of Color in our pajamas from our room. They pipe in the sound over the TV, and yeah, you know, it wasn't the best view in the world, but we had already seen it up close earlier in the trip. So, yeah, it was just a nice little capper to our trip.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And it's really the only place you can get that kind of view, because you can't really get that view from Grand Californian or Disneyland Hotel anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, Grand Californian has a deck where you can go up and watch World of Color, but you'd be hard pressed to do it from your room, I think.
Sure.
And one other thing about the Paradise Pier too, I stayed at club level this time for the first time. I'd never done a club level room at any of the hotels before. And, you know, I think a lot of people love it. It's a good value for some people just because of the way we visit and the way we tour the parks. We didn't feel it was a good value for us. It was, you know, the club level didn't open until 6:30 a.m. And on a day when the parks, you know, the early entry starts at 7 a.m., we're already out the door by 6:30. So it was useless on those days to us.
Sure.
We did manage to get breakfast there a couple of days, but really that's about it. We're not people who come back in the middle of the day to relax or, you know, have lunch at the hotel. So I'm not disparaging the club level in any way. I'm sure for a lot of people, it's really, really nice. Just didn't work for us.
Sure. I mean, and I'm glad you put it that way, because that's really what it comes down to, is it can be a value if it fits your touring style or your vacationing style. But in your case, you know, what you learned was that your hours don't match up with the concierge lounge or the club level lounge hours. So it didn't make a lot of sense for you ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, we were, you know, out the door. The very latest we were out the door any morning was probably 7:20 a.m. for an 8 a.m. early entry. And then we don't get back in the room till, you know, probably 8, 9 p.m. that night when the club level is already closed. So just, you know, it felt like a little bit of wasted money to us, but I'm glad I did it. So now I know I'll never have to worry about it again.
Well, right. At least until you decide to go back and specifically take a, you know, slow down and kick back and relax in the resort type vacation, like that's happening anytime soon.
Never happen. Maybe at Disney World.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and start talking a little bit more then about your park adventure on this trip. And let's maybe take the easier part first. So let's talk about the Disneyland side in terms of parks. And I guess the big story on the Disneyland side at this stage, especially while you were there, is sort of congestion and construction progress, right?
Yeah, that's still ongoing. You know, while we were there, the kind of back alleyway between Frontierland and Fantasyland that is a great congestion reliever, that was still closed. It's open back up now, so I understand that's done a lot to relieve congestion. But yeah, it's still a bit of a mess. I mean, you don't notice a lot of the construction because they have, you know, really strategically placed scaffolding up over, you know, by Critter Country in that area. You know, I doubt at this point where a lot of the Rivers of America stuff is starting to open back up, you're going to notice much at all now.
Excellent. And so let's go ahead then and talk about highlights. What things about your Disneyland experiences, you know, really stood out? What things did you do at Disneyland that were memorable?
Well, you know, Disneyland for the most part wasn't a huge focus on this trip. We spent a lot of time at California Adventure, but there still were a few nice highlights over at Disneyland that I can give you. One was a direct result of staying at the Paradise Pier. They have a few kind of unadvertised activities that you can register for. They had basically a magic lesson at the magic shop.
Oh, cool.
You can register for it certain days. It only takes place during early entry. And it only takes place on certain days. It happened to only be taking place on the very first day of our trip. So we had to spend, you know, our very first early entry inside the magic shop, which was kind of, you know, setting my teeth on edge because I wanted to be out there taking advantage of the rides. But
right,
I knew we'd get to that other days. So we go in the magic shop at 7 a.m. and one of the cast members, you know, takes us in the back room and teaches us a few nice card tricks. And you get a couple of free little magic tricks at the end. The whole thing cost $10 per person. And it was just such a nice little, you know, it's just one of those nice things that a lot of people don't know about.
Yeah, that is really new. And I'd never heard of that. And it was that something you were able to register for at the front desk there at Paradise Pier or in the park?
You have to register for it at the guest services desk at the hotel, at any of the three hotels, from my understanding.
Okay, very nice. So that's usable from any of the Disney-owned hotels. And that's one of those little bonuses that, you know, I think you just don't think about or you know, realize exist.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of little things like that. Like at the Disneyland, they do a tour of the Disneyland Hotel that you can sign up for, which I would love to do someday. But again, I'm in the parks all day, so it's tough.
Right. You got to make time for it.
Yeah. But just my advice would be if you're staying at one of the three hotels, just go up to the guest services and ask them. They'll give you a little schedule of all the hotel activities you have available, and you might be surprised what you find.
Sounds like it. So the little magic shop lesson was something it sounds like you felt like, even as you gritted your teeth that you were giving up rope drop time, it was ultimately worth it?
Oh, totally. Yeah, my daughter loved it. She's still, you know, trying to fool us with the card trick that she can't wrap her head around that I know the secret to, too, because I was there. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. And of course, to entice you to make some purchases, if you take the class, you get a 10% discount on anything you buy at the magic shop that day. So that's a nice little bonus if you're planning on buying anything there.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. But let's see, what else at Disneyland? I finally got to try the Red Rose Tavern, which I'm trying to remember. That was not there yet when you visited, right, Aaron?
No, it's very new. The Red Rose Tavern is essentially a redressed Pinocchio's Village House, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's Beauty and the Beast themed.
Right, and they put it in to coincide with the live-action Beauty and the Beast film.
Yes, yeah, it opened up right around that same time. Lines when it first opened were just insane from what I understand. But, I mean, that's typical with Disneyland.
Sure.
All the local pass holders, you know, they just come just to experience the new thing.
Right.
So I was prepared for very, very long lines. And I budgeted that into our touring plan that day and walked up. And of course, there was literally nobody in line.
I've asked somebody else about this, and from what you saw, I mean, you said there was literally nobody in line. So that's interesting to me, because the question that I've had almost since this place opened is, you know, is this the kind of thing that is going to be there only as long as it has sort of direct promotional value, and will it go back to being Pinocchio Village House here in another few months? Or does it have staying power under this new identity?
My feeling is it looks like they put just enough money into the overlay, into changing the theming, that I think it's going to be around for a long while, if not for good. I mean, Beauty and the Beast, even without the movie just opening, that's a hot ticket franchise. You know, that's always one of the big Disney draws.
Sure.
So I don't see that going away anytime soon.
Okay. And talk a little bit about the product itself. You said there was no line. So what was the dining experience itself like?
They had some really interesting options. I was in a burger mood the day we went. We ended up visiting twice during our trip. But the first time we went, I got something called the Beast Burger, which, you know, from the description sounded really good. They said it's like a third of a pound beef patty. And it said it had like a beef tenderloin in it. I'm like, oh, that sounds really interesting. A hamburger made out of beef tenderloin. But I got it. And what it was, it's a hamburger with chunks of beef tenderloin on top of it, which very odd, but very tasty.
Huh. I mean, what it reminds me of a little bit is, at Walt Disney World, they've had this sort of habit lately of dressing up almost anything you could imagine by, you know, throwing pulled pork on top of it.
It was essentially that, except it was beef. Yeah.
Okay. So it's the same concept.
Yes, very much. And of course I had to have the gray stuff, because I've heard it's very different from Be Our Guests. And it is, I mean, it tastes very similar, but it's just presented differently. It's how can I describe it? It's kind of a mousse over a cake filling, like a sponge cake filling. And then it's on top of some kind of like chocolate cookie or pastry or something. It was very good. It's been so long since I tried the Be Our Guest version that I can't really compare the two.
Right.
Very tasty. They had another dessert that I tried later that was beautiful. It was some kind of raspberry mousse thingy that was designed to look like a red rose, you know, to fit with the Beauty and the Beast theme, but it was not good.
Ooh, yikes.
It was I don't tend to like very custardy, eggy things, and that's what it was. It was very slimy, almost like a flan texture.
Right, you know? Right. So
that is not my thing. It was just more personal taste.
Okay.
Than anything.
So like a creme brulee custardy kind of thing.
Kind of, yeah.
But not smooth like creme brulee. It sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Other than that, I don't remember any standouts from the menu. It was a lot of the same typical stuff. Burgers, I think they had a vegetarian. Oh, now that I mentioned vegetarian, they did have a very interesting vegetarian sandwich that I tried. It was a cauliflower steak sandwich, which does not sound good. But I had heard so many good things about it that I decided to try it. And it was quite tasty. It's just a huge, you know, cauliflower steak grilled. And then it has all the typical burger dressings on top of it.
Okay.
And it wasn't bad, you know. It was a good vegetarian option. I'm keeping that one in my back pocket because I have a few friends that visit that are vegetarian. So I'll let them know about it.
Sure. Well, and, you know, it makes a certain amount of sense. I think we've started seeing that more often in a lot of different contexts. Because for people who are not familiar, you know, most of us see cauliflower most often, you just see the florets, you know, the little ends. But to do the steak, they basically cut, you know, perpendicular down through the cauliflower. And so you get that it's a cruciferous vegetable like broccoli. So if it was broccoli, it would be the stemmy part.
Yeah, it'd be like the stalk. Yeah.
But with cauliflower, that mass is not, you know, there's more of a bulb there. So there's a bigger mass when you cut vertically through it. You've got this kind of big, you know, surface that you can grill.
Yeah, yeah, it was easily a good 3-4 inches. You know, it was the size of a good hamburger patty.
Nice.
So it was decent. You know, I doubt it's something I go back and order again, just because I'm not a vegetarian and a real burger is better. But
sure, sure.
Anyways, let's see, what else at Disneyland? The only other thing I can think of note over there on this trip is we did the Walk and Waltz Footsteps tour again. This is my third time, my daughter's second time. She really, really wanted to see the Dream Suite again, which is nice. She was blowing everybody away with her own knowledge of Disney history.
Yes, playing Disney trivia.
Yeah, when we got over to New Orleans train station, the tour guide thought he was going to stump everybody. And you know, there's always this Morse code thing playing at the station. And he asked, hey, does anybody know what that message is? And without missing a beat, my daughter raised her hand. Oh, yeah, that's Walt's opening day speech when Disneyland opened. And everybody's jaw just dropped. Like, how does a 9-year-old know that? But she did that 3 or 4 times on the trip. But yeah, we've talked about that tour a lot before. It was sure. It was very, very similar, so not a lot to add there. But seeing the Dream Suite's always awesome.
Right, right. And you know, it's one of those things that I think that people ought to think about doing. I mean, it for somebody who's a real Disney fan and a fan of sort of the history and the company, in addition to the, you know, the activities of the park themselves, it's a really good tour. I think because it has good content, but it's not too long, right? It doesn't take up your entire day.
Right. It's 3.5 hours, and that includes lunch. So, you know, it's easily just a half day. It's not like some of the longer ones over at Disney World.
Right.
I know one other very nice thing about the tour, you know, completely fortuitous for me, one of the other tour members, tour group members, actually used to be a Disneyland Paris cast member, and he has visited every Disney park worldwide, and our family is planning a trip to Shanghai and Hong Kong in November, so I got to pick his brain about a lot of stuff. That was very nice.
Oh, very cool. There aren't a lot of people who have, you know, firsthand Shanghai experience that they can share so far.
Yeah, not yet. Yeah,
at least not on the stateside.
Yeah, so a lot of people at the park with Shanghai shirts, not accost every one of them. No, they just have the shirt. They had been.
All right.
One other notable thing about that very first day at Disneyland, it was just so crowded. I mean, I don't even understand. It was a Thursday. It was probably literally the most crowded day I've ever seen at Disneyland.
Wow.
Some of the lines, I was, you know, keeping an eye on lines over at California Adventure to see if it would be worth hopping over there. And I think California Screamin', which is very rarely, even on busy days, over a 30-minute line, it was topped out at like 2 hours.
Wow.
It was insane. Yeah. I mean, it made for a very, very unpleasant first day. Thankfully we had the World of Color dessert party scheduled for that night. So we were prepared. We hopped over to a California Adventure and did that. Awesome as always.
Okay.
But, Disneyland, you know, like I said, it's, you know, of course it's awesome. Disneyland is always awesome, but that wasn't the focus of this trip. So I think we have other stuff to talk about.
Absolutely. All right. Well, so then that does kind of bait us right into the next step here, which is, you know, you spent a lot of time at Disney California Adventure on this particular trip, at least partially because there was kind of a lot going on. This was opening weekend, and you mentioned before we started recording, you know, it wasn't scheduled like this when you booked your trip, but Memorial Day weekend also was kickoff weekend for Summer of Heroes and the grand opening of the rethemed Tower of Terror, now Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout.
Yes, the most annoyingly punctuated ride in all of Disney history. I have to type that name a lot. Has not only a semicolon, but a hyphen, too.
Semicolon, hyphen, and all caps.
And all caps, yes. So it's Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout! Anyways, yeah, it was, you know, when we booked this trip, that stuff wasn't even on the horizon. You know, I knew at some point Guardians of the Galaxy was going to open, but when they announced the date, I was a little irritated at first because I knew that's just going to throw the whole weekend into turmoil. And it kind of did, but it was in a good way.
Okay.
It was such an interest. It was such a different feeling in the parks to be there for a weekend that something so major was happening. I'd never been around for anything like that before. You know, the night before it opened on Friday evening, they were having on Thursday evening, they were having a big media event. So Hollywood Land over there was completely closed off, and a lot of the stars from the movie were there. So people were, you know, trying to get peeks of that. And then on Friday night, they had Hollywood Land closed off again for the big, insanely priced, you know, kickoff party.
The preview event or whatever. Opening event.
The privilege of paying $150 to be one of the first people on the ride. Which a lot of people did. I talked to a lot of people over the weekend that did it, and all of them that did it thought it was worth every penny. So kind of wish we had done it. I guess you got a lot of swag, which was, you know, probably really nice.
Right. Now, one of the things that you said, and I'm curious, you know, how quickly it was apparent that this was going to be the case. But I know that we talked a little bit, and you said that you were struck by the incredible impact that the opening of Mission Breakout had on the crowd pattern at California Adventure just immediately.
Yes. So on, let's see, it opened on Saturday.
Right.
On Sunday, we got to ride it one time on Saturday. I managed to get a fast pass early in the day before that was the day we did the Walk and Waltz Footsteps tour. So I, you know, hopped over there to get a fast pass, came back for the tour, and then our fast pass came up in the evening. But on the second day is when I really got to kind of pay attention and see how it was affecting crowd patterns. We went in for early entry on Saturday morning. California Adventure opened at 8 a.m. for early entry. We got to the front gates at 7:30, probably a little before 7:30, let's say 7:20. They were already letting people in, which was extremely unusual.
Right, so they're basically preloading the park.
Yeah, they were letting you in and letting you line up over kind of down that Hollywood Land corridor right in front of the Frozen Live Theater, either to get on in the standby line or get a fast pass. We elected to get a fast pass because the standby line was already, you know, at 7:20 a.m. It was already easily 200 people long.
Wow.
We managed to get one of the very first fast passes. So, by the way, you know, listeners may have clued into this already, but yes, they are giving fast passes during early entry now.
Yeah. Now that's an interesting point. And did you find that happening everywhere or just at Mission Breakout or just at DCA?
Everywhere.
Okay.
So.
And that's new. I mean, even Walt Disney World, basically, you know, they've got the advanced booking system. You can't book a FastPass Plus during extra magic hours. The FastPass system isn't operating. It looks like Disneyland has kind of gone the opposite direction. And as their electronic system has come online, they're now actually activating FastPass during extra magic hours.
Right. And not only are they doing that, the earliest return times are actually still during extra magic hours. So, for instance, they open up the FastPass machine at 8 a.m. We were one of their very first people in line, and we got a return time for 8:40. So before, you know, the early entry was even over.
Oh, okay.
So right after we pulled the FastPass, we ran over to California Adventure. I mean, sorry, to Cars Land, just to see what it was like.
Sure.
While we were waiting for our fast pass to come up, it was literally deserted. I have this great picture that I took. I was standing at about the entrance of Radiator Springs Racers. I turned around, and there were three people in sight down the entire street. It's,
wow.
it's just fascinating. We had already ridden Radiator Springs Racers, so we didn't bother with that right then. But we hopped on the other two cars' land rides really quickly. You know, I'm getting my days confused.
It doesn't matter. We don't have to worry about which order things happened in. Okay. I think the more important issue really is the impact it had on the sort of overall crowd flow and the touring pattern, because clearly, at least, you know, with this initial opening, and we'll see how it goes. But my impression is that this is at least early in the summer here, still the case that Guardians of the Galaxy is really shifting the attention of folks at the beginning of the day, especially in California Adventure.
Yeah, absolutely. At least, you know, that first weekend for sure. I haven't paid too much attention to wait times since then, since our trip is over.
Right.
But it was very, very much siphoning off traffic from Cars Land, from Paradise Pier, which is already dead during early entry anyway. But so if Guardians of the Galaxy is not your thing, or if your kids are too short for it and you're there during early entry, you could easily probably knock out almost in the entire, you know, Cars Land, Paradise Pier area during early entry. Yeah. What we ended up doing is, after that initial surge of the standby line at Guardians of the Galaxy, we noticed the line didn't look too bad. So we, you know, already had our fast pass in hand. We didn't use it. We got in the standby line, which was listed at about 45 minutes. It was about 10. So okay. We wrote it standby. We, at about that time, it was 8:41, which means our fast pass window was open.
Uh-huh.
We went back over, got another fast pass, because we can now pull another fast pass because our fast pass window has passed, right?
Oh, right.
So we got another fast pass. It was still during early entry, so nobody else is at the fast pass machine. Regular park guests weren't allowed to get them yet. Got another fast pass for 9:05 a.m.
Wow.
So we jumped back in the standby line, which was still 10 minutes, wrote it again, used our fast pass for 8:40, then used our fast pass for 9:05. We wrote it four times within the first hour.
That's amazing.
I can't guarantee that would work for everybody, but it worked for us. That was the second day the ride was open, and I felt the entire trip was a success just for that.
Well, and you know, that may moderate, but assuming that they continue this practice, and so far there's every indication they will, you know, it really does mean you want to approach your day a little bit differently, because it just gives you so many additional opportunities to take advantage of that extra magic hour, you know, status, and to leverage FastPass, and you know, especially where right now at DCA, you essentially have two attractions that are attracting, you know, 90%, it seems, of the attention in the entire park.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to force a lot of hard choices for people, I think. And I think it makes extra magic hour at California Adventure and staying in one of the three Disney hotels even more of a value.
Sure.
It makes doing both of those rides on the same day possible, even multiple times.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, because that's one of those things that, you know, over on the Walt Disney World side, we've started to get a little, I guess, a little spoiled about, right? Is that we now with FastPass Plus can pretty much be assured that if you get booked far enough out, you're going to be able to make, you know, a fast pass. If there's two attractions that are both rope drop worthy, right? You can always make a fast pass for one, which means you can rope drop the other.
Sure.
And at Disneyland, that really hasn't been the case necessarily, because you've got to physically go pull the ticket. You know, you don't have quite that same assurance that you're definitely going to get that access to, you know, two headliner attractions every time.
Yeah. Yeah. I already mentioned this, but it's just going to make staying on property so much more valuable, I think.
Yeah.
Just for a point of comparison, this is the day before Guardians of the Galaxy opened. We had an early entry day at California Adventure. And I think I posted this on Facebook, you probably saw it. In our early entry hour, we rode everything in Cars Land, including Radiator Springs Racers. We had a fast pass to return to Radiator Springs Racers at 9:20. We rode California Screamin', and we rode Toy Story, all in that first hour.
Wow.
I think we rode Toy Story two or three times, actually, because it was a walk-on.
Wow.
But
So you basically knocked out what is, for most people, you know, half of their daily touring plan at DCA in the first hour.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were kind of struggling for things to do by the end of that day.
Bet you never thought that was coming.
Nope. Well, this is what happens when you visit twice a year, like five days each time, like we do.
That helps, but it also, I mean, it's just a matter of being able to efficiently experience the attractions in the park, because it's not like there wasn't anything to do. It's just that you were actually able to get through and do those things, even though the crowd levels were noticeably elevated.
Yeah, and well, I actually meant to mention this when I mentioned the elevated crowd levels earlier. It was just that very first day, that Thursday.
Interesting.
It was insanely packed, so much so that I was really dreading the rest of the trip. And then Friday was one of the most pleasant days I've ever experienced at Disneyland. Lines were manageable all day long up until the evening, you know, which on a Friday is really, really unusual. I found out later, I think, what the culprit of that was. It was that Thursday was the final day for a super discounted California resident ticket they were offering.
So people
had bought these tickets in advance, and that was the last day they could redeem them.
I'm sure that had a big impact. And the other thing that I have to wonder whether it played into it is, because I think that you know, this is one of the reasons that crowds at Walt Disney World aren't totally insane in the summer, is that Memorial Day weekend, my guess is that there are a lot of locals who normally, you know, Disneyland is sort of on the menu of weekend activities, who say, no, holiday weekend, it's tourist time, we're getting out of the way.
Yeah, it could be. But then again, with all the new stuff going on, you never know, too, because that always draws
That's true.
Locals.
Although that's why they were there Thursday.
True, yeah. But the new stuff hadn't premiered yet. So,
we'll
never figure it out.
No, never.
Other than that, well, we've talked about, Guardians of the Galaxy lines a lot. So let's get into the ride.
Sure. Now, I don't know that we can jump right into talking about the ride without talking about the line in terms of the experience of it.
Oh, sure. And, just as a point of comparison, I was talking about what the lines were like during early entry. During the rest of the day, the lines were topping out at, 3, 4, 5 hours. So,
whoa.
Yeah, it was the lines were going, they actually had lines routed backstage, which is extremely unusual. they had taken over the standby area for Frozen Live. So they were using that entire queue area. They were just letting people go directly into the theater for that instead of having them line up. And it was nuts. But we didn't pay a lot of attention to the outside stuff in the line because we were moving through that part so quickly, because the standby lines were so short when we were there. But once you get inside, it's really something to see. I mean, it is one of the best themed rides I have seen in quite some time. There's such a level of attention to detail that, we went on the ride 5 times during our trip, and we noticed something new every time. There's just so much stuff to look at. It's just because of the concept that they came up with for the ride, that this is the collector's collection, right? So many little knickknacks and artifacts sitting around everywhere. There are Easter eggs for other Disney rides, which I'm not going to spoil. But there's even it's a Marvel ride, so there's a cameo by, somebody who turns up in almost every Marvel property. Which I won't spoil, but, that pretty much gave it away. The ride itself, the mechanics are essentially the same thing as Tower of Terror. It shoots you up, it drops you down. But they I don't know what they did. They adjusted in such a way it feels like a different experience. It's Tower of Terror to me was always a little jerky. It was like shoot you up, stop, drop you down. It just a jarring stop. This was more kind of a bouncing, very flowy
interesting
drop. And yeah,
so they may have actually made some adjustments to the actual ride mechanics in this as well. I'd heard at least some conjecture that some at least of the randomization tech from Walt Disney World is now incorporated into the attraction. So I don't know if that's true or if it's just the the actual mechanics of the ride, the physical kind of way it works has changed a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not sure what. So what I've heard is I don't think it's completely random. I think, you know, there are six ride sequences. There are six songs you can get.
Okay.
And each song has its own drop sequence.
Okay. That makes sense.
I don't think it's random for each song. We got to experience three of the songs, and they were definitely different for that. But, I was upset when they announced this ride. I'm not a huge Tower of Terror fan, but I like it a lot. I was not thrilled they were taking it away, but I am so happy with this new ride. It improves on Tower of Terror in so many ways. It's a complete story from beginning to end. It has some great humor in it that Tower of Terror didn't have. It just has a much more comprehensive storyline. I don't want to spoil anything, so I'm not going to go into too many details.
Well, I do want to talk a little bit just about one detail of the attraction that I think merits some discussion, because the perhaps most consistent feedback that I've heard about the attraction, other than the overall impression that the theming was just so immersive and did such a good job of telling a full story, is that one of the mechanisms for telling that story is a little animatronic that has a reputation developing already as quite possibly one of the best animatronics of this modern sort of, animatronics, 2.0, 3.0 age. While everybody was over here obsessed with the Navi Shaman, the Navi Shaman, over at DCA, they may have trumped it.
I don't know. See, I'd have to see the other one in person. Rocket is pretty impressive. The only bad thing is you have to be in the right position in the room to see him.
Oh, okay.
If you're stuck kind of over in the corner of the room where he appears, you can't really see him very well over the wall.
Oh, because he's right above your head.
He's kind of up at the top of the, he appears in the kind of entry room where you used to watch the Rod Serling intro, the story of the Hollywood hotel.
Yeah, the old library room.
Yes. Yeah. Now it's the collector's office. And by the way, keep your eye out in there for lots of artifacts. There's different stuff in each room. if you're not in a really good position, you're going to miss a lot of what Rocket does. And it's really funny. Yeah. It's a great animatronic. There's just so much great humor in the ride. This doesn't spoil the ride in any way, but at one point when you shoot up clear to the top of the tower and it opens up to see, you can see the park.
Right.
You hear, at least during some of the ride sequences, you hear just this total throwaway line. You hear Rocket go, "Is that Disneyland? That's thematically inconsistent."
Which is just great, because that's what you heard over and over again during construction from some of the, purists who just were really unhappy with the exterior of the new Guardians of the Galaxy attraction.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they just took this part of the ride that obviously doesn't fit and just hung a hat on it and made it a joke. Right. And yeah, I mean, Kevin Crossman's talked about it a lot on the show, about his feelings about the exterior of it. But I'm still not sold on that. It really doesn't fit in with the rest of the park right now, but I think it will.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
Yeah, I think once they really get the rumored, Marvel Land stuff going, I think it'll fit in just perfectly. I'm sure they've thought about all this.
You would think that there's a bigger plan. You would hope, at least. Okay, so that's Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout. We talked about FastPass strategy and all that. Anything else about DCA this trip that stood out? Because you spent a lot of time there. Maybe some other things about the Summer of Heroes that you got to experience?
Oh, yeah. There was some really great stuff that, you know, kind of is getting totally overshadowed by Guardians of the Galaxy. There is basically a DCA equivalent of Jedi Training Academy now. It's the Avengers Training Initiative. The setup is just like Jedi training. You go in the morning and sign up your kids. Your kids have to be with you, obviously, just like Jedi training. I think the age is 6 and up as opposed to, what is it for Jedi, 4 and up?
Yeah, Jedi is 4 to 12.
Yeah, and this is 6 to 12. So you need to be aware of that. Anybody with a little younger kids. And it's basically Black Widow and Hawkeye come out and train your kids to be Avenger apprentices, and you get to defeat a bad guy. And it's fun. It's not nearly on the level of Jedi training yet. I don't know if it's going to stick around after Summer of Heroes. I think it would need some work if it does. For instance, at one point, there's this big device in the middle of the stage. All the kids are trying to defuse, and they have to throw these little Captain America shields at it. Well, to make things go faster, they've split the kids up into two groups, and they're standing on either side of this device, hurling Captain America shields at it.
Towards each other.
Exactly. I mean, I think everybody could tell where that was going.
Yeah, and yeah. It's that whole, you know, lining up for the execution, you know, firing squad in a circle.
Yeah, yeah. We did the show. I mean, my daughter loved it. Don't get me wrong. She thought it was fantastic, so much so that she wanted to go back and do it twice. So we did it twice. Both times, kids got hit in the face. So I've already heard that they've trimmed 5 minutes from the show. I don't know what 5 minutes it is. I doubt it's that part because that's probably kind of the centerpiece. But
sure.
There are just little puzzling things about the show that I think need some work. It just seems like it was thrown together really quickly.
And it probably was.
It probably was. I mean, I just envision a management group sitting around saying, hey, we need Jedi training over at DCA. And this is what they came up with.
Or just, you know, we need some interactive entertainment. And so they went into that well. And that's what they came up with.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, you know, just like with Jedi training at the beginning, they teach instead of a lightsaber sequence, they teach the kids a little fight sequence. It's about 6 moves long, but then puzzlingly during the show, they only ever use 2 of those moves. So like the last 4 that they took, you know, several minutes teaching these kids, they never even mention again. It's just strange.
Whereas at Jedi training, they run through that exact same sequence in the same order during the fight.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it has potential. I think it needs a little tweaking, a little rewriting here and there, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it stays around just because there's not a lot going on back in that corner of DCA. It's kind of right there across from, Monsters Inc, the Monsters Inc, right? Oh, and I had mentioned earlier that you need to go in the morning to sign up your kids. Right now, it's popular enough where you could probably go in. I mean, sorry, it's not yet popular enough that you could probably go any time of the day and sign your kids up.
Right. Now, be careful too, because this is a Summer of Heroes thing, which means it's only going to be there officially. I mean, it may hold over, but for now, all that goes away, what, September 15th, I think?
Yeah, sometime in September. So hopefully it'll stick around and get a little better, but you never know.
Can I just say my favorite part about this is that when it opened with Black Widow as a featured character.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I love that there's
so glad.
Yeah, and that they made her not only there, but they also have a very, very prominent meet and greet with her. It has like this whole ceremony, her coming out in front of a battle vehicle and marching down, you know, the main thoroughfare in Hollywood land. It's just a big deal seeing her come out. And it's Black Widow. It's not Captain America. It's not Iron Man, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Great. I love
Very
it.
Cool. Glad to see that. About time. Yep.
And let's see, what else was there with Summer of Heroes? They have this kind of cool little thing called the Hero Action Center. It's essentially a bunch of iPads set up on pedestals where you answer a bunch of questions, and then it assigns you a you know, your superhero identity based on the answer to the questions. Kind of a much more high-tech version of the thing down in the Beast's library at in the animation building, if anybody's ever done that. But it's a little strange that the questions they're asking, they're at a very high reading level. So I don't think most kids could just walk up and do this on their own. They would have to have a parent read it to them.
Do you think it's designed that way so that, you know, you won't just have little kids, playing with iPads? Or, you know, is it just a matter of maybe not as well designed as it should be?
I think probably the latter, because kids are going to play with iPads regardless.
Okay.
But this was just a very it looked like a very temporary thing. I wouldn't expect this to stick around past the summer. But it was just a cool little thing. Like I already mentioned, they had the Black Widow meet and greet. We didn't do that because my daughter, you know, felt like she got to meet Black Widow during the Avengers training.
Right. So, and they're done that.
Yeah, exactly. One other really cool thing they're doing is the I forget what it's called, but it's basically a Guardians of the Galaxy dance-off. Several times a day, Star-Lord and Gamora come out right in front of Mission Breakout and start a dance party. The whole conceit is that Gamora, of course, won't dance, just like she wouldn't in the movie.
Right.
And they get people from the audience to come up and learn different moves and what have you. And it's a lot of fun. You know, it's not so much an interactive show, except for the few people that get selected. But it's a fun show to watch. And then at the end, Groot comes out. And that's as soon as the dance-off is over, then Groot hangs around for a meet and greet. So, you know, everybody's already figured out an insider tip that if you get to the right spot during the dance party, as soon as it's over, you'll be first in line to meet Groot.
So. Oh, okay.
And the Groot costume is amazing. It looks so good. It's not baby Groot like at Hollywood Studios. It's full size, 8 foot tall.
Right.
Groot.
It's the tree.
Yes. And he talks, of course he says the one line.
But, of course he does. That's all he has.
Yep. But let's see, Summer Heroes, other than, with a lot of cool little food items they had, that about wraps it up for that.
Okay.
There was one other new thing that weekend that totally got overshadowed. A lot of people still probably don't even know about it. And that was a replacement show for the Disney Junior Live on Stage.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I actually had seen a little bit of buzz about it, but so little that I wasn't even sure what exactly happened there. So
yeah, exactly.
Catch us up.
Yeah, it totally got overshadowed by everything else. It opened the day before Mission Breakout. My daughter is always going to say she got to go to the very first show of it, which is cool. Yeah, I didn't tell her about soft openings, so
that's all right. Just between us.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, ostensibly it's a replacement for Disney Junior Live on Stage. They thankfully got rid of the puppets. There are full-size characters in the show now that come down and interact with the kids. The conceit of the show is there are two DJs that come out with iPads that they let the kids play around with that are triggering different actions, like starting different songs or making different sound effects. And somehow they tie it into all these different Disney Junior properties right now. I guess there's something now called Mickey's Roadster Racers or something. I don't know. I'd never even heard of this one.
Nope,
my kid's a little out of the demographic. But there's a segment featuring Mickey and Minnie with that. And then there's a segment focused on the Lion Guard. So Timon comes out and interacts with a few of the kids there. And there's a Sophia the First segment. It's a really cool little show. You know, it's going to appeal to exactly the same audience that Disney Junior Live on Stage appealed to. But I think it's just a better experience because I think a lot of people were disappointed with Disney Junior Live on Stage because they thought there were going to be full-size characters in it and there were just puppets.
Right, right.
Whereas this is the characters you would meet in the park.
Yeah, the actual walk-around characters.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just a cool, very high-tech show. I think it has a lot of repeatability.
Nice. So that, I think, takes care of that piece. Any other things stand out about Disney California Adventure that are not part of Summer of Heroes, or was that really where your attention was?
That was where a lot of our attention was. I mean, of course, we did everything else in the park like we always do. The Pixar Play Parade finally returned while we were there. That had been on hiatus for several months while the construction was going on around Guardians of the Galaxy, because the parade couldn't get out of the gates. it's the only time I've ever seen that, where I've ever actually had trouble finding a spot to watch that parade.
Okay.
Because we tried to watch it the very first day it came back. So, of course, it was a little more popular than normal.
Right.
But let's see. Other than that, what else happened?
Well, you know, we haven't really talked food at all, other than the Beauty and the Beast restaurant, right at the beginning of the report. Any other dining experiences that stood out?
Yeah, there were a couple. I always have this great little spreadsheet I make before we go where I plot out every meal and I plot out at least one new restaurant a day that I still have never got to try. And of course, by the end of the trip, it's just shot. I mean, I didn't get to half of them. So I still have at least three things for my spreadsheet that I need to try at some point. But we finally got to do one thing on this trip that we had never done. My daughter just wasn't in a place where she would be able to do it or enjoy it. And we got to do the Napa Rose Chef's Counter.
Very nice.
On our very first night there, I knew we were going to, you know, get there plenty early enough to do it. So I made a reservation for the 5:30 seating. And for those that don't know about it, it's essentially you go into the Napa Rose, which is, you know, arguably the best restaurant in the resort. One of the two best restaurants. I'll put it that way.
Fair enough.
Carthay Circle may give it a run for its
money. Right,
right. But, and the chef comes out and talks to you before the meal, just talks about your likes, dislikes, if there are any allergies, what have you. And the chef makes a meal just for you. It's you don't order anything. You just have to trust that the chef knows what he or she is doing. And in this case, they did. I mean, every course was a hit. It's a lot of food. It's like, I think, six courses.
Yeah. It's a pretty complete experience. Let's put it that way.
It is. And my daughter, who is, you know, like a lot of kids, a fairly picky eater, the chef just nailed it right on the money. You know, my daughter told her that she liked salmon, she liked steak, and she just kind of played on that and got things, you know, that maybe weren't exactly salmon or steak, but were related closely enough that she would try them. And yeah, I think she tried every course. It was pretty amazing.
Cool.
And it's just a nice experience. I always like tasting menus like that, where you don't have to make any decisions for yourself. You just trust the chef and let them take you on a food journey.
Very nice. And sounds like great. It was one that was well worth taking.
Totally. I mean, it's not cheap. You know, no nice restaurants like that at Disney are cheap.
No nice restaurant like that, right? Like that anywhere is, and I don't think you would want it to be. I mean, that's kind of the point, right?
Is that for sure?
You're getting the best of the best, and you're getting the chef gets to play with, you know, the good ingredients, the best stuff, without worrying about whether it fits within the, you know, target price for the menu for, you know, and makes the profit margin it's supposed to make, and all those other things that get taken into consideration most of the time in menus.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, more so than the food, I think my daughter enjoyed just as much. You're literally sitting at a counter facing the kitchen. So you get to sit there and watch them make everything and watch how a kitchen works. And that was just so fascinating to watch. Just watching the, you know, the organization of the chef talking to her team and all that. It's fantastic.
Yeah. See, it's the kind of thing that you do that and then you want to go back to the hotel and, you know, pop in the DVD from Ratatouille, right? And watch the scene where they go, you know, where Remy reviews the roles of the various chefs.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It was a very, very good experience. We'll definitely be doing that one again. The only other new things I can think of we did while we were there, we finally got to eat at the Wine Country Trattoria, which is a restaurant in California Adventure. It's an Italian restaurant. It was fine. I truthfully, I don't remember a lot about the meal, which means, you know, it probably couldn't have been that notable. It's been over a month since our trip, so I'm only remembering highlights here.
Right, right. But, I mean, I guess it means, you know, both directions, right? In other words, it wasn't...
It means it wasn't bad.
Right, right. It wasn't so good that you remembered it, but it wasn't so awful that you're like, ah, stay away.
Yeah, so I think it'd be a nice option. You know, they do the World of Color dining package there. So for people that maybe are scared off a little bit by the price or the food at Carthay Circle, you know, Wine Country Trattoria could be a safer, a little more inexpensive choice.
That's true. Although now they still do, though, sort of, I don't know, tier the viewing locations, right?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So it'd be a slightly different viewing location. The Carthay Circle location is a bit better.
Right, but it's, you know, substantially cheaper, so consideration.
Yeah, it's quite a bit cheaper. And then the only other new place we got to on this trip was we finally did the Aladdin's Oasis on the Go electrical parade dining package.
Oh, okay.
Which I mainly just did. You know, I really had no interest in the food there. It's not supposed to be amazing, but I wanted to do it just because it's one of the dining packages that I had never done.
Right, and it's, you know, the idea is that it's basically what it purports to be. It's a picnic meal, you know, while you go and watch the show.
Sure, yeah. And you don't even have to do it while you watch the show.
Right, I mean, right. And that's a conceit, but...
Yeah, from lunch on. So we went and had our food at lunch. And, you know, it was kind of cool because that's actually an area of the park that most people don't even know is there. It's been closed up for so long, the little Aladdin's Oasis area back there.
Right.
So I had never been back there. And we just sat back there and ate our food. You know, it was fine. It was, you know, it was a step above cafeteria food. It was better than a buffet, but it was still very much just, you know, very quickly assembled, not fine dining by any means. But I will say that since you get, you know, a pass to a reserve viewing area for the electrical parade, it is by far the most inexpensive way to do that. I think it's a great value for families that want to have a reserve spot like that.
Yeah. And, you know, I learned the hard way earlier this summer that it's also a great option for people who are traveling with a larger group and want to do a dining package to make sure they get a good viewing spot for the parade, because Blue Bayou is really difficult to book with a large party.
And it fills up quickly anyway.
Right, so. Right. But with a large party, I mean, it's awful. And I found out why, by the way. I was told that Blue Bayou will only book a party of 10 for the first seating of the night.
Ah, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, so there's basically one slot. And if the slot gets filled, that's it. There's one chance. But the Oasis package is an alternative because since it's not, you know, they still limit the number of them that they sell, but it's not like Blue Bayou where you have to fit in a particular slot in the restaurant. I think there's a little more flexibility there, especially with a larger group.
Yeah. That makes total sense. So yeah, it's a really attractive viewing spot that they give you back there. It's a small world. You are behind some, like a walkway where other people may sit or stand, but you're elevated. So you still have a great view of the parade. We didn't have to show up very early at all. And we got a spot, you know, right up at the front. It's a little further away from the front of the park than I like to be for a nighttime parade, because I like to be positioned to kind of get out after. But, you know, it's great for it's a really attractive spot. I'd do it again, probably.
Sure.
And it certainly is more inexpensive than the other parade dining packages.
Cool.
I'm sorry.
No, that's right. Go ahead.
No, I was actually going to move on to our fifth day, which that's actually fine. Ended up being completely improvised and on the go, unless you had any more Disneyland questions.
No, that was perfect. I was just going to say, you know, what else have we not yet covered that you want to make sure we talk about? And it sounds like what we haven't talked about is this last day that was sort of a improv day and is a little bit different than the way you normally tour.
Yeah, for sure. I just did pop in my head. It's just a tip I always like to give people going, because it's a good tip. when you get your tickets at Disneyland, take a second and snap a quick picture of the back. Sometimes a cast member will warn you to do that, because if you lose your tickets, it'll make it so much easier to replace them, because you'll have pictures of the numbers and all that.
Right.
And you're going to say, oh, I never lose my tickets. And I said the same thing. But for some reason this time, I took a picture. And then the next day, I lost my tickets. And I whipped out my phone and showed them. And they were so appreciative that I had done that. And the whole process to get them replaced was so fast. They had me set up probably within 5 minutes with new tickets for the rest of our trip. And anyway, just take a quick minute and snap a picture of the tickets. All right. Anyway, so let's move on to our fifth day. I had originally planned we were going to do 5 days at Disneyland. Like I said, we had kind of got that unexpected fifth day due to the hotel and flight prices. But by that fifth day, we thought we had covered everything at Disneyland so well, we just decided to do another impromptu day at Universal Hollywood. We had done that on our last trip and enjoyed it so much, we wanted to go back. Because it was Memorial Day that day, we thought crowds may be pretty busy. So we went ahead and did the exact same thing we did last time, which is book a VIP tour again. It's pretty good value compared to Disney's version. It's not astronomical. You know, it's still expensive, but it's not.
It's pricey, but you get value for what you've paid for, because you basically get taken care of all morning.
Yeah, you get unlimited front-of-the-line pass all day, you know, before and after your tour. You get, it's about a 6 to 7 hour guided tour, including a really nice lunch. You get an expanded studio tour where you actually get to stop and get out of the vehicle and take pictures at some spots. We got an awesome picture right in front of the actual Back to the Future bell tower. On this tour, so when we visited in November and did the VIP tour, we got to see the exteriors for one of our favorite shows called The Good Place on NBC, starring Kristen Bell and Ted Danson. Sound like a commercial. on this tour, we got to see the interiors, which couldn't have been planned better.
Right.
Yeah. So that was a nice little, bonus. One thing that struck me about this tour, it was still fun, but our tour guide just, she wasn't the best. She didn't seem, every other time I've taken any kind of tour, whether it be at Disney or at Universal or where have you, that the tour guide really kind of goes out of their way to make it personal and get to know you and, you know, why are you here and where are you from? And this tour, I never seemed to do that. It's like her goal was to get us through that park as quickly as she could. And that was her job. And she wasn't going to do anything but that. So it was very impersonal. It was still very good. And if we hadn't taken the previous tour in November, I probably wouldn't have even noticed it. But it was just a reminder of how the person you're assigned can really affect an experience like that and affect your like view of how much of a value it was.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, look, you always roll the dice a little when the experience is going to depend upon somebody, a live performance, basically.
Sure.
But I guess, even when it wasn't the perfect experience, there was enough to see and do that was unique and different and you got something out of it. I mean, you get the VIP parking when you arrive, you got, mm-hmm. did they still do the kind of continental breakfast buffet piece? Mm-hmm. So they feed you in the morning, you get your park tour piece, which includes front of the line access, you get your studio tour, which is extended, you get your catered lunch, and then you get to hang out and continue using front of the line pass or express pass the whole rest of your trip.
Yeah. It's, considering everything you get, it's not an outrageous price.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You're the one who went there.
All right. I discovered one completely unintentional little tip for Universal Hollywood on this trip. One of the main things that a lot of people want their kid to experience when they go to Harry Potter World is the wand fitting at Ollivander's, right?
Yeah.
But they don't know that it's a very, very large group of people that go in there and only one kid gets picked.
Yeah, and this is something that's an issue in on the Orlando side as well. I mean, you know, they take basically 15 to 20 people in that room at a time, and one kid gets chosen to do the wand ceremony.
Yeah, and I'm sure there are, you know, lots of tears, lots of upset kids. But anyway, this unintentional tip that I discovered is we arrived right at early entry. You know, when you buy your ticket, you know, directly from Universal online, you get to go into Harry Potter World an hour early. Well, we got there. You know, our tour hadn't started yet, so we went ahead and headed over to the Wizarding World. And of course, I'm all gung-ho to head right for a fantastic journey because we have front of the line pass and it's early entry and we'll get to ride it a bunch of times. My daughter was just insistent on going in Ollivanders because she wanted a wand. And so I just, you know, I followed her lead and we went in there, and everybody else at that time, early entry had just started, is so focused on the rides. There were only like five people in our group. And there was only one other kid.
Okay.
So her chances of getting picked just increased exponentially.
Sure, you know, sure.
She basically has a 50-50 chance now, and she got picked. Okay. Our very, very first thing at Universal is she got picked for the wand fitting, and I got picked to spend $60 on an interactive wand. But it just couldn't have been a better start to the day. You know, I can't guarantee, of course, that will work for everybody, but it worked for us.
Yeah, all it does is improve your chances.
And, yeah, everybody else is heading for the rides, head for, you know, the places everybody else is not heading for.
That's right. That's right. And it sounds like you clearly feel like, you know, a VIP tour, a lot of people would say, okay, that's a thing we'd do once. But really, it sounds like if you've only got one day, that's maybe the best way to get the maximum value out of your one day.
Well, I will say, if it hadn't been Memorial Day, I doubt I would have booked the tour. I was really, really worried that it would be just so crowded that we wouldn't have a good experience without, you know, the front of the line pass and all that. So right, that's right. Why I booked the VIP tour. If it had been a regular, you know, Monday or a regular weekend day, I probably wouldn't have done it, but I just bit the bullet and did it. We had had such a good experience on it the last time. So, but it was okay. Worth it. Even with the issues with the tour guide, it was still worth it.
All right. So, you know, I think we've covered the, you know, full breadth of the trip. Looking back, what's going to be the thing that's going to say, you know, daddy-daughter trip 2017, 5 years from now?
I think the one thing, you know, as I mentioned before, this is the first time that we have ever been there the weekend that something really big was happening. So my daughter is always going to get to say that on the very first day she got to ride, you know, the very first day it was ever open, she got to ride Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
It's something, you know, that nobody can ever take away from her, as cheesy as that sounds. And also, you know, not nearly as a big deal for most people, but she enjoys that she got to see that Disney Junior dance party the first day, because even though she's a little older, she is somehow still obsessed with the Lion Guard and the Lion King because she loves lions. So, right. You know, I intentionally kept it from her that the Lion Guard was going to be part of that show. So she was just gobsmacked when it happened.
Yeah, great. I love that. So she got a little extra surprise.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess my advice would be, even though you might think, you know, being there on a weekend, you know, when something really, really big like that is going to be a huge mess, and on some level it was, it just affected crowds in a way I didn't really know how to approach things.
Right.
It can also make it really special. There was just this super cool level of excitement all weekend wherever you went in California Adventure. Like, oh my gosh, have you ridden it yet? How many times have you ridden it? What songs did you get? You know,
yeah, right,
it was great.
Yeah, there's that whole anticipatory buzz that's going on all around.
Yeah, yeah, it was just a great experience.
Right. Well, you already shared a couple of really great tips. Any parting shot here for somebody else who's planning a trip, you know, maybe looking at a holiday weekend trip and is concerned about what might be issues with crowds or managing that kind of a trip?
I've already given away so many of my tips in this episode. So there's one thing I don't think I've said before. I've kind of alluded to it a little bit. But if you have a day that you think is going to be super crowded, like, for instance, I think, yeah, on Saturday. I thought our Saturday was going to be super crowded at Disneyland just because of the new ride opening up, plus it being a weekend, sure. plus it being a Saturday and a holiday.
Yeah.
I booked the Walk and Waltz Footsteps tour that day.
Okay, so that's
because
good.
Something like that is not going to be affected right. by crowds.
Get yourself out of the regular lines, basically.
Yeah, you're skipping lines. Do something like, you know, book the World of Color dessert party. Book the, you know, parade dining package. Something to help you deal with the crowds.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. A lot of sense. Well, you know, David, thanks for coming on and talking about your daddy on a trip. You know, I think we get the annual updates, so we've been following along each year, and it's fun that you continue to find new and different things each time. And I guess, you know, the real excitement is that probably the next time we get you back for a trip report, we're going to get to hear about Shanghai.
For the first time on the Diz Dads, I think.
I think so.
And is it the first time for Hong Kong too, or has there been one?
No, it'll be the first. I think it'll be the first one for that too. I mean, I guess theoretically we could have somebody between now and then, but so it's coming
Diz
up
Dads,
here pretty quick now.
Diz Dads, you have been challenged.
That's right. Somebody race David to Hong Kong and Shanghai. I'd be happy to have you on.
Yeah, I can't wait to report on that one.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation. Right at the start of everything that's new, one little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dream Finder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas. Anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow. Horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment. And there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.